reading sensationalists from across the fruity plains.
You're listening to the Andy Pin Show.
The smooth talk of the town.
Cool.
We are back on the Andy Pin Show on WEBR Radio, and today is August 25th, and it is the birthday of Elvis Costello, a great rocker, Gene Simmons of Kiss fame, and guess who's older? That's right, Gene Simmons was born in 1949, Elvis Costello, 54. Heck, it's also the birthday of Billy Ray Cyrus and Rob Halford, who was in Judas Priest. Walter Williams, and no, I'm not talking about the Walter Williams who is the sometime substitute host on the Rush Limbaugh program. He's an economist. That Walter Williams is an economist at George Mason University, one of my colleagues. No, Walter Williams was in the OJs. Anyway, let's get back to the election. And let me wrap up about Joe Biden. So Biden's a good pick for several reasons, all right, for strategic reasons. First of all, he's qualified to be president. If something were to happen to Obama, God forbid, Joe Biden would make a competent president. He might make a really good president. Secondly, in terms of strategic value, Joe Biden can help deliver certain voters, all right? He's from Delaware. Well, Delaware is reached in part by the Philadelphia media market. So he's known in southeastern Pennsylvania through any place where the Philly television market reaches. They know who Joe Biden is because he's a senator in a neighboring state. He's sometimes called the third senator from Pennsylvania. The reason that's important, of course, is Pennsylvania's a swing state. Delaware's not. Delaware's going Democratic no matter what happens here. Pennsylvania, it's likely to go Republican. In fact, what all the pundits say is, I'm sorry, it's likely to go Democratic. All the pundits say that if the Democrats lose Pennsylvania, they will lose the election. And that's true because it's the one state that, well, the Republicans hope they're going to be competitive. If they win that, they'll win a few other swing states and they'll beat Obama-Biden. But I don't think they're going to. Right now, they're down by several points. It may be as many as 5 or 6 points in Pennsylvania. And I think it's going to get bigger as time goes on. But the argument is that those working-class voters, regular white working-class people, as I think Chris Matthews called them at one point, they're skeptical about Obama. Well, they voted for Hillary, but that doesn't mean they're necessarily big Hillary supporters. Some of them are going to switch and vote for McCain. But if there's anybody that on the ticket that can bring him around, Hillary might have brought him around, but I actually think Joe Biden can bring him around. And it's time for a little of Joe Biden's biography. First of all, he was born in Scranton, Pennsylvania. He's a Catholic. 25% of the country is Catholic. He's an unassuming man. Okay, he's run for president twice, but this is a senator. He's longtime Washington, and the McCain campaign is trying to say, oh, Obama's not the change candidate anymore because he chose one of the people with the most Washington experience of all. But Joe Biden doesn't hang out at Washington parties. Okay, he's not on the cocktail circuit. He's not, in that regard, a Washington insider. He's an insider in the Hall of Congress, meaning he knows how things work and he knows how to get things done. But he takes the train home every night, the Amtrak train every night to, well, I shouldn't say every night, most nights of the week, he takes the train home to Delaware, to Wilmington, Delaware, and gets off and goes home. This is not a guy that's made a career out of being in Washington. Also, he has faced and overcome adversity. He was elected to the Senate, and even before he took office, at age 29, his wife and child were killed in a car accident. He almost quit and didn't take the Senate seat, but he was persuaded to. He got over that. He got remarried a number of years later and had another child. So he has two children from his first marriage and one child from his second marriage. But he's not a guy that got divorced. that gave up his wife, he lost his wife. So for all these reasons, Obama's a pretty much a regular guy. He's also known as the poorest senator in the U.S. Senate. That is, he has less money than any of the other 99 senators. Right? He's not a multimillionaire. In fact, since he's had kids in college, his net worth has gone down. I saw some figure that said he's worth something like, I don't know, $150,000 is his net asset. So I'm thinking, how can that be? You know, if you're out working for a few years, you probably have net assets above that. The dilemma is, of course, if you have kids in college, you may spend $30,000 to $40,000, you know, or more on a kid's college education. So he's only owns one house. Right? And of course, this is going to be a narrative that comes around because McCain was asked the question a week ago or so, how many houses do you own? And McCain he paused and didn't know how to answer. And here's the problem. If you say 7 or 8 or 10, whatever the right number is, it doesn't sound good. And he didn't seem to have a ready explanation, although he should have. And if you say, I don't know, that doesn't sound good. So he said, I'll have to have my staff get back to you. Well, they never have. They've refused to answer the question. This question came in an interview with the Politico, who in general are right of center when it comes to analysis of issues, but reasonably fair overall. But the Politico went and did their homework. So did a couple of other news organizations. And the Politico came to the conclusion that McCain's own 8 homes. Now, they're mostly all in his wife's name. They're in Cindy McCain's name. She's the one with the money. She is worth over $100 million. And she has inherited that money from her father's business. So Obama used that in an ad and came out and said, John McCain doesn't know how many homes he has. And they listed, I think they listed the 7 that we know about. And they said, and there's one home we can't afford to have him have. And that's the White House. Well, the McCain campaign came back right away and said, Barack Obama doesn't want to get in a fight about housing because he got his house with the help of Tony Rezko, who's a convicted felon. The Obama campaign will take this argument any day. So the short version of Obama's problem there is he bid, the house was up for sale for $1.9 million in a nice area of Chicago. The Obamas offered $1.6 million and the offer was accepted. At the same time, Tony Rezko's wife, and this was one of Obama's early backers, he's a guy with some money and some investments in Chicago, who had not yet been indicted and now has been indicted. But it doesn't have anything to do with Obama. Resco's wife bought the plot of land that went with the house because the people didn't want to sell just the house and the Obamas couldn't afford the house and the extra quarter acre, a half acre, whatever it is. And then they turned around and they bought a chunk of that land, a third of an acre or whatever it is, from Resco's wife. So it doesn't look good, but there was nothing illegal about it. Okay. And the Obamas only own one house. Admittedly, it's worth $1.6 million. Maybe it's worth more now because they bought it a few years ago. But I think I heard, I forget which right-wing talk show host I heard, I think it was Sean Hannity today, claiming their house is worth $4 million. Right? Well, the McCains have 5 or 6 properties worth more than $1 million and a couple worth more than $4 million. Right? And this is an area that now that it's opened up, and the Politico asked the question, it's going to become an issue that the Obama campaign will bring back from time to time throughout the campaign, because what most Americans don't realize is that John McCain is rich. Now, technically, he's not rich. His wife is rich, but he lives the good life, right? The McCains spent $237,000 on servants last year, you know, maids, chauffeurs, butlers. I don't know what all the servants are. They didn't detail them, but their tax returns show that they spent that much on employees, okay, service employees. And the Politico documented they own 8 houses. You know, I don't begrudge anybody their houses, but the Republicans have been trying to paint Barack Obama as elitist. Okay? Now, yes, he went to Harvard Law. Okay? But here's a guy and his wife that grew up on the south side of Chicago, right, in relatively poor circumstances, raised in a single-parent household, right? This is not the kind of upbringing that George Bush had and Bush's son, George W. Bush had. This is not the kind of upbringing that Al Gore had or that John Kerry had or that the Kennedys have. These are people that came up the hard way and made a success of themselves. And it's true, Obama earned about $4 million last year because he's written a book and it's made a lot of royalties. But if you were to average the last 20 years of the Obama's tax returns, their average salary, their average income, till you got to these last couple of years of making money on books, that it has only been about 2 years, their average income is probably maybe $100,000 at most, which is a nice income, but it's not in the stratosphere. The Obamas earned $4 million last year. The McCains earned about $8 million, I think. Maybe it was 6.5. But that's every year they earn that money, and it's earned mostly off of the $100 million that they've got in the bank or in investments. Now, the McCain campaign wants to say, look, they file separate tax returns. McCain signed prenuptial agreement. And that's all Cindy McCain's money, and those are all her houses and properties. I don't think you really want to go there. At one point, somebody on the McCain campaign said this, that John McCain doesn't know anything about his finances, that Cindy McCain keeps the books, and so he shouldn't be expected to know how much his mortgage is or how many houses he owns. But the way this is a legitimate campaign issue and not an attack on Cindy McCain or on McCain, which is what the Republicans are claiming it is, the way it's a legitimate point is that it matters whether you're in touch with people's issues. You know, the economy's really the biggest issue we have this election, and it comes down to this, that most Americans want a president that can relate to their problems. You know, if you've got 2 incomes and a big mortgage, and you lose one of those incomes from a layoff or a health problem, suddenly you can't make the payments on your household, on your mortgage, because you've overstretched yourself or something. Now, people shouldn't be doing that, but that's the situation a lot of Americans are in. Some people just have trouble finding a good job, right? And so you're out of touch if you don't understand how this works. I'm reminded of when George W. Bush was interviewed a few years, and it was in a town meeting a few years ago during one of the campaigns. I think it was the 2004 campaign. A woman got up and said, "Mr. President, I work 3 jobs to support my family." And she described how she had 3 jobs, 1 full-time and 2 part-time, I think it was. And basically, she was saying, "I have to do this to make ends meet. What can you do to help those of us that are in these situations?" Bush interpreted it as a success story, and he said, "How uniquely American that you're out there really working hard. I really admire you." And the woman is like, "Hey, I've got trouble here. How can you make it so I can get a good night's sleep?" So he was out of touch. His father was out of touch. He went into a grocery store to look like a regular guy, and they asked him what the price of milk was. He didn't know what people were paying for a gallon of milk because he doesn't do his own shopping. Someone else does it for him. Right? That's not normal. That's not how the average American lives. And Bush also was amazed at the scanning, the UPC symbols and the scanning machines they had. This was the 1988. No, must have been the 92 campaign. And scanners were in all the grocery stores. We all knew about them. He was amazed at that new technology. Right, he was out of touch because he didn't do his own grocery shopping. So that's why this issue is important with McCain's houses, is because it shows the country is not aware that the guy walking around, the 72-year-old man walking around with an unassuming clothes on and a baseball cap, they aren't aware he's a rich guy and he's living the good life. Okay, I'll explain when we come back why that is fair game. I've been. You know, even if someone handed me $1 million this morning, I'd still be doing my radio show on WEBR. Why? Because I have commitment. I have dedication. Plus, I signed a contract. Now, if you'll do the same, I'll have one more dedicated listener. Don't worry, you can void your contract if I ever get obsessed with liberals or gays, the flag, the pledge, embryonic stem cells, the UN, illegal immigrants, missing white women, or the country of France. So tune in the Andy Finn Show on WEBR, Mondays at 10 p.m. Hey, if you had $1 million, you could buy a radio station. We are back on the Andy Finn Show on WEBR Radio, and we are just 15 minutes, a little less than that, away from Midnight Mutants with Adam and his guest this evening. So I want to go back to John McCain and this issue of that's been raised about the number of houses he has. You know, I don't care how many houses he has myself, but fair is fair. And I want to take you back to 2004. We had a similar situation on the Democratic side. John Kerry married a rich woman. In fact, he married two of them. And his second wife, Teresa Hines Kerry, is really rich. She has like $500 million. Okay? And so the Republicans painted him in the most unflattering light. Let me read you some quotes. Okay? A guy at World Net Daily, one of the conservative online newspapers / blogs, Joseph Farah, said that he was President Gigolo. And he said, quote, this is in 2004, quote, "But if there is one characteristic of Kerry's life that should disqualify him absolutely as a candidate for president, it's the fact that he sought out millionaire wives to take care of him. Not to put too fine a point on it, he's a serial gigolo." Does that make McCain a gigolo because he fell in love with a rich woman? Farah goes on, "Let me ask you this. How many single women do you know worth $100 million or more? Is marrying well good preparation for serving as the President of the United States? He always has a net underneath him throughout his political career. In his case, a net woven of 24-karat gold." And then, of course, Teresa had him sign a prenup too, apparently. I didn't ever realize this, but that's what is pointed out by World Net Daily. And of course, McCain's wife has a prenup with him as well. And what the conservatives were saying at the time was, which begs the question, if his own wife doesn't trust him with her money, why should we trust him with ours? Now, are they saying the same thing about McCain? Of course not. That was a gratuitous attack on Kerry. Here's Rush Limbaugh in different times during 2004. These are direct quotes. I mean, he's been there. This is about Kerry. He's been there. But he's basically a skirt chaser, folks. He's a gigolo. Kerry is cheap. Most gigolos are. I mean, I think it goes with the definition. What do you consider a fair wage? John Kerry considers a fair wage a wife with $500 million. So he had to find a company that had one. Well, there aren't too many of those companies that have little heiresses running around that are single, have $500 million that some guy can marry into. Because, see, Al Gore's daddy was a senator, and Al Gore's daddy worked his way up from wealth and power to wealth and power, et cetera, et cetera. So Rush Limbaugh goes on and on with it. Ann Coulter said that in 2004 on Hannity and Combs, "John Kerry can't really speak to the middle-class tax cuts in as much as he is a kept man. He lives off the money made by other men and left to their daughters or wives." Now she's saying the same thing about John McCain? Of course she's not. And by the way, you're not hearing the left say things this extreme either. There may be bloggers saying it, but you're not hearing people on TV. And this was Ann Coulter and Shan Hannity? Sean Hannity agreed with her on this issue. On Charlie Gibson. Charlie Gibson questions Ann Coulter about referring to John Kerry as a gigolo. And Coulter says, okay, then I don't want to hear him talk about middle class tax cuts when he's made his living off of rich women. I mean, it's simply a fact that he's married two heiresses. His specialty in life, I mean, if he has an economic plan, I think the one I'd like to hear about is not how to snooker millionaires into marrying them, me, and living off them. I mean, this is not a trivial point. Okay? They went on and on about this, that Kerry wasn't a man, wasn't really a man, or wasn't honest, because the person he married had money. Okay? So, I'm not saying we should be as harsh. And there's other quotes that go down on the same line. People in National Review, Michelle Malkin, okay, made claims like this about John Kerry, right? Just 4 years ago. Okay, I don't want to go there with McCain. That is, I don't consider him a gigolo. I believe that he married for love. Okay, I don't think that he's a kept man living off the money of that other men made and left to their daughters, right? Those insults that conservatives, the wacko conservatives, hurled at Kerry 4 years ago. But when the McCain campaign gets indignant, or conservatives get indignant and say, this is an attack on Cindy McCain, no, this is about whether or not John McCain will be in touch with the plight of average Americans. You know, Republican and Democratic views on the economy are pretty standard and pretty well set. Republicans like to say that the blacks in this country don't know enough to vote their own self-interest, because they vote 90% typically for Democrats. And some Republicans and conservatives are mystified by this, because from their point of view, heck, why wouldn't you vote for us? We're trying to grow the economy and get more jobs out there, and that's what you need. But people understand their self-interest, typically. Right? And Democrats are the ones who are willing to raise the minimum wage. Republicans are the ones that say, well, raising the minimum wage will hurt the economy. Let the market forces handle it. Democrats are the ones that are willing to rein in corporate power when we have a monopoly, whether it's AT&T or it's Microsoft. If it's costing the consumer, or the oil companies currently, if it's costing the consumers more money than it should, if the free market isn't working, they're willing to step in and take action. The Clinton administration was pressing the antitrust suit against Microsoft. They wanted to have Microsoft break off the operating system from the rest of the company, so that they couldn't use the unfair tactics they had been using to force people to take Microsoft products like Microsoft Office and put it on their computers and prevent them from putting other Office-type products on the computers. It was a pretty clear case. Clinton administration was holding Microsoft's feet to the fire. When the Bush administration came in and the Justice Department changed hands, that suit went away and Microsoft was let off the hook. The European Union still held Microsoft to account, and they had to take action differently in Europe. But, and that's a small point, I don't want to make too big a point about it, except to say that for Republicans, the free enterprise system is an absolute belief. That is, they believe it should be unfettered, and they have infinite faith in the laws of supply and demand. But most economists realize that the economy needs tweaking from time to time. Just because you set up a system a certain way doesn't mean it will be fair, or that the rewards will be dispersed according to effort or according to the way they ought to be. And this kind of takes us into tax policy and why Republicans and Democrats are different on tax policies. Republicans always call Democratic techniques for giving tax breaks to the middle class or the poor redistribution of income. what people have to realize, that the economy is a construction of mankind. It's a human construction. There's no law of nature out there that says supply and demand will operate properly, or that the economy must be set up a certain way. We set up economies the way we set them up. We set up the stock markets with rules. We set up the dollar and the financial systems and the monetary systems with certain rules and certain procedures. And so the idea that somehow that's natural, and then when you tweak the system through tax breaks or tax cuts or tax increases, that that's a redistribution of income. No, the entire economic system is an initial distribution of income. And the question is, what's fair? Okay? And when we tax capital gains at a lower rate than labor, well, what's the logic behind that? That's we should revisit that from time to time. All right? So don't fall for all the Republican arguments that say that limousine liberals are happy to give away your money. No, a limousine liberal is basically a liberal with a lot of money who's willing to tax himself at a higher rate for the good of the country. There's something admirable about that. You know, it's not just the Kennedys that are willing to tax themselves at higher rates than the middle class is taxed. Bill Gates. And Bill Gates' father is out there on the stump, out there in the country talking about it. But Bill Gates believes that he should pay more taxes, a higher percentage of taxes, than the average working person in this country. So does Warren Buffett, right? It's only the ultra-conservatives and the Republicans who have an absolute belief in the free enterprise system, that it must be operate completely unfettered, whatever that means, who have this belief. So when it comes to the difference between Obama and Joe Biden on one side, two guys that haven't lived the lives of millionaires, even though Obama's making millions now from his book, and they're up against John McCain, whose wife has over $100 million, and if he picks Mitt Romney next week, Romney has even more money. That's the choice we have. Is do you want your leaders to be the two guys who come from the Republican way of thinking about the economy and who both have enough money that they don't have to worry about the day-to-day problems the average American deals with? Or do you want to go with Obama and Biden, who know the problems the average American has because they've dealt with them most of their lives? They haven't been wealthy most of their lives. For me, the choice is pretty clear. It's so clear, I don't have to state it here. Although, as I said at the top of my show, it's true. I did send Joe Biden $100 earlier in the campaign. And then a little bit later, I sent $100 to Barack Obama. Well, that'll do it for the Andy Finn Show for tonight. We'll be back next week with another edition. Actually, we won't. Next week is Labor Day. The radio studios are closed on Monday. I couldn't get in here if I wanted to do my show. So I'll be back in 2 weeks, and we'll know who John McCain has chosen by then. Until then, you can read about my show at andyfinn.us. Until then, do it. Don't doubt it.